to talk to you about the possibility of non-crystalline salts in the Martian regolith, and I added a question mark to my title just to be clear that we haven't actually detected these. There's no confirmed detections, but I'll show you some of the evidence that's at least consistent with them, as well as review some of the lab experiments that make me think that they could be present on Mars, mostly carried out by other groups, and then maybe discuss some of the implications if they are present. Okay, so let's start with the Mars observations. We have this spectacular Curiosity rover, which has, for the first time, an X-ray diffractometer instrument on board, and this is a 2D diffraction pattern acquired from the first soil measurement that was done at Gale Crater. And refinement of that pattern showed that there was approximately 30 to 45 weight percent X-ray amorphous components in the soil. The rest of the soil is mostly typical basaltic minerals, as you've already heard. And we have some chemistry data on that amorphous component, which suggests that it's probably the bulk of it is poorly crystalline silicates and iron oxide, so things like volcanic glasses and olefin and hyzinderite and other nanophase iron oxides. But we do know that there is a sulfur component associated with this X-ray amorphous material. And so the question is, what is that sulfur-bearing species? And there's been a couple of hypotheses put forward for the sulfur-bearing species in the amorphous component. One is that you have sulfate anions that can be sorbed onto nanophase iron oxides. And the other, sorry, my volume keeps changing because I keep looking at you. Maybe I'll just look this way. The other is, the possibility is that there's amorphous sulfates. Let me try this. Sorry. And I'll talk more about the amorphous sulfates as I go on. From orbit, we have other indications that poorly crystalline materials might be more widespread than just beyond the Mars rover observations. So from infrared measurements, we can model those spectra, and typically we see pretty much everywhere except where the dust is, which we can't really model very well for reasons I won't go into, but we see about 10 to 20% poorly crystalline materials in these models. And right now, we're not exactly sure what these materials are. We've tried glasses, altered glasses, olefins, other poorly crystalline aluminosilicates, amorphous sulfates, and all of these can get used in the models. And in my opinion, in many places, especially where it's a lower abundance, it's really difficult to distinguish what it is, especially when you're dealing with mixtures in an atmosphere. But I will say that we can't get good fits without poorly crystalline phases. So I think that poorly crystalline phases are pretty widespread across the Martian surface. So the question I'm going to get to is, could amorphous sulfates contribute to the amorphous soil fraction? So I'll review some known Mars-relevant mechanisms for amorphous sulfate formation. I'll talk about some of their characteristics and then the possible implications. So there's essentially two main mechanisms for forming these, and this is based on extensive laboratory work done by mostly other groups. Both of the mechanisms involve rapid dehydration. So in one case, if you start with crystalline magnesium or ferrous sulfate hydrates, so perhaps epsomite or hexahydrite or something like melanterite, if you expose that to very arid conditions, you rapidly dehydrate it, you can form an amorphous phase. So this is a picture from Vanneman and Shapiro where they took an epsomite crystal. They let it sit at sort of ambient conditions for a while, and it dehydrated to hexahydrate, which is just one water molecule less per sulfate anion. And then they took that hexahydrate crystal and put it in a rough vacuum, and they formed an amorphous phase. And notice it kept the same crystal habit there, even though it is X-ray amorphous. Then they took that, and they re-exposed it to high relative humidity conditions under cold temperatures, and it slowly recrystallized back to epsomite and expanded in the process by about 70% volume. And then also here's an example showing a stability diagram for magnesium sulfates as a function of relative humidity and temperature. And you can see that if you start out with epsomite or hexahydrite, for example, and you drop the relative humidity, you can eventually form an amorphous phase. On this is shown the typical relative humidity variations that you saw that we saw at the Viking lander site, just to show that you do see pretty large swings in diurnal variations in relative humidity. So rapid dehydration of crystalline hydrates is one way to do this. The second mechanism is through rapid dehydration of brines. And in this case, you'd have to have a ferric sulfate brine. So if you have a ferric sulfate brine, you expose it to very low humidity conditions, or put it in a vacuum, you basically form this beautiful amber-colored glass. So how can you get a brine on the surface? Well, one way that you can form a brine is by first taking ferric crystalline sulfates, exposing them to high relative humidity conditions. These are hygroscopic salts, and so they actually take on water and they form these sticky gels. So this was originally a ferric sulfate powder exposed to 75% relative humidity, and now it forms this gel. Then you take this brine slash gel down to lower humidity conditions and you form these glasses. And you can see this is showing basically what happens when you take these brines at different humidity levels. You have to get below about 33% relative humidity to form this phase, and it will persist as an amorphous phase for several days or months at very low humidity conditions. So do these conditions apply to Mars? And I think the answer is yes. We have the starting materials that we need. So we have abundant sulfates in many locations on Mars, as you've already heard from the Mir rovers, some of them churning up sulfates just below the surface, some of them sulfate-bearing strata. From gamma ray spectroscopy, this is a global map of hydrogen and sulfur. So a global map of hydrogen shows variations in hydrogen, but we definitely have significant hydrogen in the equatorial latitudes where water ice is not stable, and so there must be some other phase that's holding that hydrogen. And the correlation of hydrogen with sulfur, which you can see here, suggests that it's a sulfate-bearing phase that's hosting that hydrogen. So I think we have abundant sulfates in the soils across Mars. We also have the conditions that we need for rapid dehydration, and that is the super hyper arid conditions that we've already heard about already. The low atmospheric pressure, low partial pressure of water is conducive to rapid dehydration. And then in some places, like for example, as I mentioned, if you want to start with ferric sulfates as your starting material, you have to first deliquesce it into a brine. We might actually have high relative humidity conditions at the surface under restricted latitude ranges, or perhaps during conditions of higher planetary obliquity, where you might have had more ice near the equator, or even in the present day in the near subsurface, you can have conditions of high relative humidity that could potentially lead to deliquescence of these ferric sulfate crystals, and then if you expose them to the surface, to the Martian atmosphere, they would rapidly dehydrate and potentially create these amorphous salts. We've been looking at the characteristics of ferric and ferrous amorphous sulfates. So we've been synthesizing these in the laboratory, and I'll just describe some of this. As I mentioned, they form these glasses that are or translucent solids that grind to a powder. We've done some synchrotron work looking at these to try to constrain the length scale of atomic ordering, and so we see atomic ordering does not go out past 10 angstroms, which confirms, you should look at the red line here, which confirms that these are truly amorphous phases and not nanocrystalline materials. We've done a bunch of IR spectral characterization, basically in the spirit of trying to potentially detect these on Mars. One of the ways that we analyze the Martian surface remotely is using infrared spectroscopy. So for that end, we've done a lot of IR spectroscopy, and I won't go into the details, but just to say that the amorphous phases here are spectrally distinctive from other ferric sulfates, although they might be difficult to detect in mixtures, and we haven't done that part of the work yet. We also have Mossbauer and near-infrared data on this as well. Don't have time to show it. And so the question is, if you did form these on the surface, as I mentioned, you have these swings in relative humidity, would they persist on the Martian surface for long periods of time? And I think there's a lot of work to be done on this, but I'll tell you what we do know, what's in the literature so far. We know that if you keep the amorphous phases under low relative humidity conditions, they can stay amorphous for a long time. So this was an experiment done by Allian Wang, and this is just the lifetime of the experiment. It was greater than 4 years, but it could go for much longer. If you go up to slightly higher relative humidity values, we know that these phases can increase their hydration state, but not immediately crystallize. So they stay amorphous, but they keep changing their hydration state for a while. Eventually, they would crystallize at higher relative humidity, and this is what Xu et al. Showed in 2009. But the rates are relatively sluggish, and so if it was a low temperature on Mars, obviously, it could potentially stay amorphous for a long time. This is some new work that we're doing where we've been incorporating other elements into ferric sulfate brines and exposing those brine mixtures to low relative humidity conditions. And so things like sodium we're finding are increasing longevity as an amorphous phase for the ferric sulfates. They also solidify more readily. So Here are some examples of brine mixtures, like a ferric chloride plus ferric sulfate brine that we expose to a low relative humidity. And again, you could form this amorphous phase. Here's one that we did with sodium bicarbonate and ferric sulfate mixed together. And again, here's the amorphous phase that formed, and then we ground it into a powder just so you can see what it looks like. So we are incorporating sodium in here and perhaps also some CO2. By the way, when you add this bicarbonate to this, obviously this is going to be an acid, this is alkaline, you mix these together and you neutralize this a little bit, and most of the CO2 you can see bubbling out, but we're pretty certain that at least some of it is actually just contained within this amorphous phase. Just more on these multi-component brine experiments, because this is the latest thing that we've been doing, just to show that, I don't want to go into detail, but that we've done lots of experiments with these different brine compositions, and to show that you can form an amorphous phase with the addition of these other elements. And we've also done some IR characterization, which I probably don't have time to describe. The XRD characteristics are variable, which could potentially be compared with the Curiosity XRD measurements. So this is sort of work in progress, but just to show that you could potentially form these amorphous salts with many different starting brine compositions. So how much time? 3 minutes. Okay, so I just thought I'd just speculate about some possible implications if these are present. So if you find amorphous ferric sulfates, the implication is it's basically an end product or an intermediate product of a previous brine. And so the implication is that you could have brines at the grain scale, and the question is what effect would that have on surrounding grains? So obviously you would these could indurate the surface or cement the grains. So here's a photo. We've done this where you have basaltic powders and you mix it with ferric sulfate brine and you let it go amorphous and it forms this nice pellet, so it's very well cemented. Another question is, if you are forming brines under rare conditions of high relative humidity, what effect would this have with soluble compounds? So these are essentially acids. When you deliquesce these, they form these acids. Would they dissolve neighboring salts, possibly incorporate those salts into that acid and then resolidify into a different amorphous glass or amorphous salt? Similarly, you know, if these are deliquescing, what effect would they have on mission hardware? It's hard to say if this is happening very often in the present day. What are the implications for atmosphere regolith H2O exchange? So these are very closely linked to the Martian humidity cycle. You would expect that obviously there is some exchange there. For Mars sample return, you could have possible phase changes during transit. So again, these are very sensitive to humidity and partial pressure of H2O. So in the process of transporting to Earth, you might not have what you started with. For in-situ resource utilization, of course, you need to know if you're going to extract water from the regolith, you need to know what species are bearing the hydration, because it takes a different amount of energy to extract that water off of those soils. And so if it's amorphous salts, that has a different energy level than other hydrated phases. Of course, this is way outside my comfort zone, but there's probably effects for biology. And I know, based on my reading of the literature, that some microbes, when they for their metabolic processes, when they use, basically they have an affinity for amorphous phases, at least for glasses. So maybe that would be the case for amorphous salts, but I don't know. On the other hand, these are super acidic materials if they deliquesce, and potentially they're changing their environment, so I'm not sure what the net effect would be, but I thought I should at least mention it. Okay, and I'll stop talking about that because, again, way outside my knowledgeability. So just to summarize, I think that amorphous sulfates are a plausible component of Martian soils, but as yet are unconfirmed. They form as end or intermediate products of relative humidity cycling, which for ferric sulfates involves a brine phase. And so I think there's several implications if these are present, several implications if there are brines forming. And again, these would be brines sort of at the grain scale. And so these implications I just mentioned are for Martian soil development and alteration, habitability, and Mars exploration.